What'd you say about haters? I don't hate players. I don't love the game. I'm the shot clock way above the game. To be point blank with you, motherfucker, the game. I'm a grown man. Ain't got no time for play.
Welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. I'm Matthew Piero, editor. You just heard Topher Valenti of the Shimano Gravel Alliance quoting Most Def's Sunshine. You'll find out more about why Valenti is rhyming about haters later in this episode. Social media editor Dan Walker, how you doing?
I am good. I am fresh off a plane, back from vacation, ready to do the pod.
That's awesome. You're just ready to like bring your stoke, your vacation vibes.
Vacation vibes, little south of the equator. It was winter where I was.
Wow.
I was not prepared.
Oh, really?
No.
You didn't bring your warm clothing?
I brought a hoodie and I wore it all week. The one hoodie because I forgot that it was winter down there.
Okay, let that be a lesson to travelers everywhere. Yeah. Check the weather network before you land.
Yeah.
Awesome. We have a very France episode of Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast.
Oui, oui.
Oui, oui. It's August. We're into the second half of the summer, but we're going to take a good look back at July. We had two very active Canadian riders with stories to tell. Who are those two riders?
That would be Ontario's very own Leah Kirchman.
Via Winnipeg, though.
Via Winnipeg. She's now in Dundas, the Girona of Ontario,
that's
as
right.
We like to say. And Michael Woods of Ottawa, Ontario.
Upper Canada.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, the rest of the country. Anyways, they had two great Julys in France. Leah had an awesome, awesome ride at La Course by La Tour. And then Michael Woods... Man, what an Iron Man, just like hard as nails, battling through two broken ribs to finish.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. Like it just, you can't even walk to the corner store when you have a broken rib. Like, and this guy is just, I don't know, biking thousands of kilometers up mountains on the cobbles, whatever.
Yeah, like, yeah, it goes down as like a hard man effort for sure. Also, you will be interested, Dan, in the conversation I have with Leah, because we pick up on a topic that you and I have been debating the last two episodes about the timing of women's races and
nice.
Such. So tune into that. And first, though, we'll head to Peterborough, Ontario, to a meeting of 16 top minds of gravel riding. In July, the members of the Shimano Gravel Alliance assembled to discuss gear and do a lot of riding around Peterborough, Ontario, where Shimano's Canadian office is located. The group has been around for roughly 2 years. It's made up of a few bike shop owners, a race promoter, a web designer, some engineers, about 16 diverse people, all united with a love of riding bikes. They've been helping Shimano develop gear for riding gravel, whether that's clothing, bags, or the components of the latest GRX line. Some of their activities take them to events such as Dirty Kanza, Rock Cobbler, and Almanzo. Some of what they do is a bit secretive. When I was hanging out with the Gravel Alliance, there were some conversations I was allowed to listen in on. For others, a journalist like me had to leave the room. The group's public displays of gravel heroism and their top secret projects got my imagination running. They were like a group of gravel riding superheroes, like gravel Avengers or something. So at the meetup at Shimano headquarters, I was interested in what people were riding and what their home routes were like, but I couldn't help wondering, who are these gravel superheroes battling?
I decided to go with a flat bar setup. I commute a lot, but also I really love mountain biking. And that's kind of where I fell in love with the flat bar. I really like the amount of control My name's Mallory Nowles, and I'm from Seattle, Washington, and I'm a part of the Gravel Alliance group. Because it's a forest road, it's like pretty steep, and so it's a steep climb and also a steep descent, or you could, you know, descend on a single track. And either of those scenarios, I'd be much more comfortable in like kind of a similar position you'd be in a mountain bike. So that's one reason why I went towards the flat bar, but also I'm into like bike packing as well. And so for like the amount of stuff you want to carry, I feel like I'm a little bit limited in what bike or bags I can put onto my bike, because if you have like a drop bar, my bars are that like fit me are a little bit more narrow, so I'm kind of like stuck with certain like kind of like the burrito style bag, or like Swift Industries has a couple different options that work, but that's like kind of it. So the flat bar really opens up that whole space, and I'm not as limited to what I can put on that area, which is pretty cool.
The Gravel Alliance makes me think of like as if you guys are the Gravel Avengers, a bunch of superheroes conquering gravel roads. So if you guys, if we run with this, if you guys are the Gravel Avengers,
yeah.
Who is your arch nemesis? Who is the Thanos for you guys?
Like in the cycling world?
And in any, it could be abstract, it could be concrete, it could be a person. It could
I feel like... So, I come from like a racing background, but I still race now, but I feel like the nemesis would be like your standard aggro roadie. I don't know. I mean, we're like a quick bunch. We like to race, but I do think that we don't take ourselves too seriously, and we really like to have a good time. So I think the opposite of that would be, yeah, aggro roadie.
a roadie with no sense of humor.
Yes, 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 very much so.
All right, well, good luck combating your nemesis, maybe, or just making these people have more fun,
yeah,
which is
yeah.
what you're about.
Yeah, for sure.
Check it out. So, longer cage, bigger lower pulley, and then, you know, obviously the body looks different. So these look like the top half looks more like an Altegra derailleur. And then, come look at this thing. Basically like an XT derailleur, right?
My name is Parker Bloom. I'm from Victoria, BC, and I'm an ambassador with the Shimano Gravel Alliance. That's exactly one of the coolest things about this project is, so there's about 16 of us ambassadors from all over North America. There's two from Canada, one from Peterborough, myself from the West Coast from Victoria, and then the balance of the ambassadors are from all over, so you know, New Mexico, New Jersey, California, Colorado, Kansas, all over. Gravel is a very different thing, you know, what we call gravel is a very different thing in each place. It's a different thing from Victoria to Vancouver, from Toronto to Peterborough, right? Like the road surfaces change, the type of terrain you're riding on changes, and the way in which you move on that terrain sort of changes. So whether you're doing a race or whether you're doing a, you know, just casual ride, or if you're doing some epic, you know, 400 kilometer event. So that's been really interesting, is seeing how different the locale and type of gravel or, you know, conditions are for each person. In the case of riding gravel in Victoria is sort of, it's a bit of a misnomer. It's more, you know, like mountain biking with little chunks of, you know, hard pack gravel road and then loose back, you know, forest service road. There's a real diversity of kind of terrain in Victoria, Vancouver Island area, and it tends to be on the more kind of gnarly, rooty, rutted, aggressive kind of side of things. No good gravel ride in our part of the world is without a bit of single track too, which is pretty fun.
If the Shimano Gravel Alliance is the Avengers of gravel, who is your Thanos? Who is your arch enemy? Take your time.
Taking my time. maybe like a grader, you know, like a gravel road grader that lays down fresh gravel, and it gets all, you know, hard to slog through and vague feeling. I think that's the worst possible. You know, that's the nemesis. I don't know.
That does sound like a worthy nemesis that the Gravel Alliance will, I hope, prevail against.
Oh, I know. Listen, I didn't even think about it. I said, I got enough people asking me about Trump, and I wear these American socks.
What the hell were you thinking?
Yeah, America. You know, we'll see.
So my official name is Christopher Richard Valenti, but people call me Topher, which is short for Christopher. I'm from Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. And I'm with the Shimano Gravel Alliance crew that is here for a couple days to mount and ride the new GRX Grupo, the new gravel Grupo from Shimano that is just being released.
If the Gravel Alliance is, say, the Avengers of gravel, who is your Thanos? Who is your arch nemesis?
Oh, man. You know, there's... The haters. Is it easy just to blame the haters? There's sticker, and I know the girl. I saw some gravel suck stickers. There's a lot of people. There's some roadies. There's some mountain bikers that are fighting the gravel thing because they're just saying, well, it's a trend. It's a marketing. And it's true, though. It's okay. People are trying to get off the roads and ride faster, longer mileage, but safer. And I think gravel is, yes, it's always been here. Yes, we used to ride these gravel roads on our road bikes on 23C tubulars. I've done it. A lot of these people have done it. But it doesn't mean that it's not real. Dropper posts are real in gravel bikes right now. Wide range gearing in a 2x is real in gravel bikes. You know, fatter tires and getting away from the cars is all real, regardless if we used to do it on single speeds with canny brakes. That's the biggest thing I've run into as far as the arch nemesis is just, you know, the haters that think Shimano and these other companies are just trying to make more money. Well, yeah, I mean, it's true. We're trying to make more money because we're in business, and that's part of being in business, also running a bike shop. I like to have more options for people, but it's getting more people on bikes, and they're happier, and it's giving them more tools to do the same stuff we used to do on, you know, single speed tubulars, whatever. It's a real thing. So I think, yeah, just in general, and what did Mos Def, I'll probably mess up his quote, but
you could try it anyway.
I'm gonna go for it. What's he say about haters? I don't hate players. I don't love the game. I'm the shot clock way above the game. To be point blank with you, motherfucker, the game. I'm a grown man. Ain't got no time for play. Something like that.
Not bad.
Mallory Nowles, Parker Bloom, and Topher Valenti are part of the Shimano Gravel Alliance. This past July, they met up with other members of their group to ride the gravel roads around Peterborough and to talk gear. The biggest performance by a Canadian cyclist in France recently has been by Leah Kirchmann. The Team Sunweb rider was second behind Marianne Vos at La Course by Le Tour de France. Cecily Utrecht-Ludwig was third. Kirchmann, who is from Winnipeg and is based in Sittard, the Netherlands, hasn't missed an edition of La Course since it began in 2014. This year, the race was held just ahead of stage 13 of the men's Tour de France. The women raced 5 laps of the stage 13 time trial circuit in Pau. About a week and a half after the event, Kirchmann looked back at her performance and at the significance of the women's one-day stage race run by the Tour de France. Leah Kirchmann, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What was Team Sunweb's plan before Lac Horse?
We went in kind of a bit open that we didn't totally know how the race would play out, since it was on a new course this year and kind of one was could create a more open kind of race. But in the plan, then I was going to be the more protected sprinter for the day, and we also wanted Lucinda there fresh for looking for breakaway opportunities at the end.
How would you describe this course? It was the first time in the Pyrenees, and La Course has been in a few places, Paris and in the Alps, but how was this one based in Pau?
Yeah, it's definitely really different than the first editions. Like the first few years, we were on the Champs-Élysées, and so it was really a sprint every year. I think it was one solo once in the rainy edition. And then the last few years have been really mountainous and just really suited the pure climbers. And so compared to those editions, then this course was still a really hard course, and every lap had a pretty tough short climb in it. And there's also this really steep kicker that you hit before the finish. But it was definitely more of an all-rounder kind of course, so we've had sprinter courses, climber courses, and this was kind of very open to how it could play out.
The race seemed very active. Your teammate Lucinda Brand was in a few big moves, but how was your race?
Yeah, for me, I especially focused on always being in good position for the climbs and really just saving energy and staying out of the wind as best that I could. That was until the very end, and then I just had full focus on first surviving those last hard attacks on the climbs, and then also just being in the best spot possible to go for the sprint in the end.
What was your reaction when Marianna Vos launched her attack and overtook Amanda Spratt within the final kilometer?
I saw her going, and that's when I also just started going as hard as I could and trying to match her. I know she's just incredibly explosive, and it was a really impressive final attack.
You've ridden La Course since its inception in 2014, and you were third in the inaugural edition. This year's podium has echoes of that. Marianna Vos on the top step again. But you've moved up to second. We were mentioning how those were different profiles of courses. But what does that say about the racers involved that once again the two of you are on the podium?
Yeah, it's true. It is reminiscent of the first edition. And yeah, I think it says a lot, I think, about the kinds of riders that, say, Vos and myself are. We're, I think we're both all-rounder kind of riders and can perform on a pure sprinter course, but also a really challenging, hilly kind of course. And the podium was interesting where, you know, you also had Cecily in third, and she's more of a pure climber, so it was kind of a mixed podium this last one. It's interesting that it was nice to be up on the podium again and one spot higher. So maybe it continues in that trend in the next years.
Definitely. Other than route changes, how has this race evolved in the past six editions?
It's changed formats a little bit over the years, but I think all of us would really love it to develop into a stage race. I think it'd be a great race if they added a few more days to the event.
So would you say then it's sort of place as a one-day race has it run its course? Or is it valued as a race amongst the peloton?
Yeah, I think it's still really valued as a race because it's honestly one of the highest profile races of the year. It has great coverage worldwide and tons of people watch it and are also there cheering for us. And, you know, you also have the prestige of having the name of the Tour de France, and that connects with the general public more, and you get more coverage, say, outside of just the cycling world. So there is a lot of value of having this race. But yeah, I think just there's just a feeling that having a stage race would be the next step for the event. Like, if we wanted to make it even bigger and better, and this could be like really a bigger event than it is now, I think, for the women.
We've debated here in the office, like, the merits of having a women's race during the tour. I'm thinking the Giro Rosa, and some of us feel that, you know, having the overlap takes away from the women's race. But then some of us have argued that no, the sort of two races concurrently can bring the eyeballs over from one race to the other. What's your feeling about the timing of women's races versus men's races and trying to have an equitable space in the calendar?
I think it's a really tough question, because I've also thought or had the same questions, like, what's better? And I think in a lot of cases, in my experience, like, it is really positive when you can have them on the same day. Just like all the classic races, like, there's normally a lot of people out on the course because they're there early anyways, and they just want a reason to cheer for people, anybody. And, you know, the infrastructure is set up. I think it's nice when you're also there with both teams, and we'll sometimes be there with the men's team, and they've started doing team presentations together. And with races like that, then I think it's really positive to have them the same day. That being said, I don't think it's necessary that you have women's races at the same time or connected to men's races, because we also have the case, like, with the women's tour, I think is the best example, where it's totally different dates from the men's tour of Britain, but it's a super successful standalone race, and it draws the crowds out and is highly successful, and isn't leaning on being part of a men's event. So I don't know which is better. Maybe it depends on the race.
Leah Kirschman, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Leah Kirschman is a rider with Team Sunweb. She was second at this year's La Course by La Tour de France. Days after Michael Woods finished his first Tour de France, I wanted to get his impressions on the most famous bike race in the world. He was in Girona, Spain, recovering from the broken ribs he'd suffered on stage 11. He spoke about his other crash on stage 8, and about finally getting a good night's sleep, and the support he had from fellow Canadians who went to cheer for him from the roadsides in France. Michael Woods, it's been 2 days since the tour has wrapped up. How are your ribs feeling?
Pretty sore. Now that I'm no longer taking any paracetamol and I don't have the adrenaline of a guy shouting the countdown to the start of the race and thousands of fans cheering me on throughout the race. I don't have that adrenaline rush, that high that kind of staves off a lot of pain and keeps you in race mode. They're sore. I went for an easy ride today with my sister and my brother-in-law, and they were aching.
Well, do you think they'll be feeling any better by the San Sebastian race this Saturday?
Yeah, for sure. I think they'll certainly feel better. I find when I'm in race mode, I don't notice them nearly as much. I think I just get such a singular focus on the race. And once I get settled into the race, at least this is what I found the last few days of the tour, the pain subsides, And then finally, last night I had a great night's sleep, which was the first time I had a good sleep since breaking my ribs. So I think by San Sebastian, I'll be feeling pretty good.
You mentioned a good night's sleep. Is that the first thing you wanted to do when the tour ended? Or what was your kind of first thing you wanted to do and then when you knew you could relax?
First thing I wanted to do is just see my family, see my wife, hang out with them. I don't get to see my family often just because I'm based in Andorra, based in Europe. Last time I was back in Ottawa actually was back in October of last year. So, just was really excited to see all of them, but, definitely up on the priority list was getting good night's sleep just with the fatigue over the last few days of the race, the fact that we're sleeping at altitude the last 3 days, the last night we slept at 2,300 meters altitude. And then also just the discomfort from the ribs. I just really didn't have a great night's sleep for the last 10 days of the race. And, yeah, it was just great to get a good full night's sleep last night in my own bed.
With your first Tour de France behind you, what is the thing that surprised you the most?
I think the scale and the significance of it. Everyone had told me about that, but until you're witnessing it firsthand, the experience, the significance, the scale, the size of the crowds, the level of attention from international media, from media back home, it's just that much more extreme. And like I said, despite being warned about it, I was still surprised by it.
During the tour, on your team, EF Education First, which teammate impressed you the most?
I mean, I have a really strong team. We have a team full of great riders. A lot of guys in the team didn't really surprise me in the race just because I knew of their pedigree and knew how strong they were and how great teammates they were. I was really impressed with TJ Van Garderen, particularly how good of a leader he is, and also after crashing, how tough he was finishing the stage despite breaking his thumb and having significant road rash to his face and all over his body. I think every rider on the team rode really well. Rigo was strong and just a great guy to be around, easy leader to work for. And I think one of the guys who's certainly the most underrated riders in the peloton is Tom Scully, a rider on my team who just was a huge factor in our team time trial, was doing a great job for Rigo in the crosswind days, and he even went off the front on the Champs-Élysées 2 days ago.
What was your favorite stage?
Favorite stage, I would have to say probably the team time trial. Team time trial was an amazing experience for me just because I got to be a part of a team that actually went super fast in the World Tour in a team time trial. I certainly wasn't contributing relative to some of the other riders on my team, but I finished with the group. We did an amazing job working together. We had a really complete roster, one that wasn't just rouleurs, but also riders that were climbers. And despite that, we were only 6 seconds off Team Ineos, and we were in a contention for a podium position. And that high of accomplishing something together, rolling so fast together, and being celebrated for our efforts together afterwards was just a really nice thing.
I find that interesting that you single out the team time trial, because I have my guesses here. My guesses were stage 18, where you finished seventh. Or even Planche de Belfi, because I know you were looking forward to that one. But I find it striking.
I found Planche de Belfi was not a great day. I felt at that point in the race, I was feeling really good, and I didn't have a great day on the bike. And I was actually in some ways, I was happy that a bad day on the bike still meant that I only conceded 20 seconds on an uphill finish. However, I wasn't ecstatic afterwards. At that point, I was in the GC hunt, and I was wanting to move even further up. And then on stage 18, I really went for the win. And when Nairo Quintana came over the top of me, I just blew up and realized that the win wasn't in my within my reach, and I kind of phoned it in for the last few kilometers, and I wasn't competing for second place. I was in it to win it, and after that, I invested so much in that win that I didn't have the legs to come second, third, or fourth. So I was more disappointed after those stages than I was excited about the performance that we had in the team time draw.
During the race, along the route, did you encounter any wild Canadian fans? I'm thinking, did anyone try to give you a bacon hand up or give you a Labatt 50 or something along those lines?
For sure. There were so many fans along the course. First week, I saw a guy dressed as a Mountie every single stage, cheering me on as I went by. That was special. And then on stage 18, going up the Galibier, that was an incredible experience with the number of Canadian fans that were there. There's a group of Canadian fans wearing one piece full Canadian outfits that covered even their faces, and there's about six or eight of them, I believe, and they all ran alongside me. And although I was in the box, having been dropped by Quintana and Bardet, I still managed to give them a thumbs up and a smile.
What did you learn from riding the tour? What's your biggest takeaway or your biggest lesson?
That I really like doing the tour. I like the fact that it's way bigger. I liked the exposure. I liked being in a sport that felt like a truly professional sport. In doing the tour, I felt like I was an NHL hockey player or an NFL football player or an NBA basketball player. I felt that level of significance. I felt justified as a professional. I felt like my paycheck was being justified from just the exposure that I was giving sponsors. And I felt like the racing was just that much cooler. I knew if I would make an attack, it was going to be witnessed by millions of people, not just a couple people illegally streaming something on a feed.
Of the things in your control during the race, what would you have done differently?
I think that's a tough question. I don't think I would have done it. I don't think I would have done anything really differently. The one thing that was in my control was the first crash where I lost time in general classification. Even that, I that was pilot error for sure, but I'd still chalk it up to just a bit of bad luck. I think my rear wheel hit a patch of oil or something or dust on a really steep, tough, tricky corner. And I don't know if I would have ridden that corner much differently if I were to do it again. So I think I'm really proud of how I raced given the circumstances, and I don't have too many regrets coming out of it.
Michael Woods, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Michael Woods recently completed his first Tour de France. The Ottawa native races for EF Education First Pro Cycling. And that's the episode. It's put together by me, Matthew Puro, and Dan Walker, with help from Terry McCall and Philippe Tremblay. It's produced by Adam Killick. He also composed the music. Also, thanks to Ontario Creates for its support. Dan, if people want to know more about all the things we're doing here at Canadian Cycling, where should they go?
You can check out more of what we have at cyclingmagazine.ca. We've got a ton of great web content up there, putting up new great stuff every day. There, you can also find our social channels. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, but not TikTok.
You know what? I was at a party this week, and a bunch of 40-year-olds were going, have you heard of TikTok? Do you know what TikTok is? I'm like, I don't know what TikTok is. I've heard of it.
Yeah.
There you go. Enjoy TikTok, kids, until the old people figure it out and take it over like we did with Facebook.
Also, you can get in touch with us over that old classic email, podcast@cyclingmagazine.ca. Dan, who should people tell about our little old podcast here when they're out and about?
Well, it is almost that time of year, so go find your local cyclocross race director and thank him before you start complaining about your race size. And while you're...
The field size.
Yeah, before your field size. But while you're thanking them, also tell them to listen to the Cycling Magazine podcast.
You know, you're kind of joking, but seriously, that is a good idea to thank a race organizer, because what they do is really tough, whether it's, you know, in your local park or wherever they can stake out a cross race. It is a big job. Thank you, race organizers. And, you know, while you're putting stakes in, you know, listen to our podcast. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, pass the time.
And also, listeners, please rate and review. The correct number of stars is
5.
And please say something nice. It totally helps us out. Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you later.